Our theme has been over the last few weeks, faith is the victory. And it's based upon something that John writes in 1 John chapter 5, beginning in verse 4, where he tells us that whatever is born of God overcomes the world. And then he says, and this is the victory that has overcome the world, our faith. And he makes asked a question and answers it in the next verse, verse 5, in which he says, who is the one who overcomes the world but he who believes that Jesus Christ is the Son of God? Faith is the victory. In our previous lesson, we considered the problem of anxiety. And according to the National Institute of Mental Health, we recognize that some 23 million Americans struggle with anxiety to the point that it has reached a point where it disrupts work, disrupts family, disrupts the social fiber of our society. It is one of the most common of all disorders. And we also acknowledged last week that it is a problem which our faith in Jesus helps us to overcome. Because if you look at what Jesus said in His Sermon on the Mount, there in Matthew chapter 6, you find that what He's telling us is that we shouldn't worry. Why? Because God cares about us. His providential love and care are always present in our lives. He also reminds us where we need to place our priorities in life upon the true needs of life. And He reveals to us our own limitations, that we cannot lengthen our lives. We cannot change certain things about us. But in addition to that, Jesus' work for us as our high priest has made possible the ability that we have to go to the throne of God and find that grace and mercy we need to help in time of need. And that's why Paul would write that we're not to be anxious for anything, but through prayer and supplication, make our request known unto God. And he tells us that the peace of God, which surpasses all comprehension, will guard our hearts and minds in Christ Jesus. There's another problem, however, that many people face today. It's different from anxiety. It's actually the exact opposite of the spectrum. Boredom. And some of you may think, oh no, not boredom. There's not a whole lot you can say about boredom. And yet, really there is. You see, where anxiety is a state of uneasiness and apprehension, boredom is the other side of that spectrum. Boredom is a condition where people grow mentally weary, where they're listless, where they are discontent. Anxiety is the thinking that we have too much to do and too little time. Boredom, on the other hand, is that we have nothing to do and so much time. Anxiety is often something that we as adults struggle with, whereas boredom is something that our children struggle with. How many of you have ever heard one of your children say to you, I'm bored? I said that to my father one time, and he said, come outside. I have something for you to do. I never said it again. But like anxiety, boredom can damage our relationship with God and our usefulness to Jesus Christ. And so I want us to begin tonight, as we think about this topic, to first of all define it. There is a renowned authority on boredom. You have probably encountered him. If you've ever picked up a Sunday paper and looked at the comic strips, his name is Garfield the Cat. And Garfield the Cat has a lot to say about boredom. He says that you can tell if you're really bored if you paint little faces on your fingernails and then pretend that they are people. You can tell if you're really bored if you spend hours watching bread mold. You can tell that you're bored if you braid your eyebrows or if you watch a 3-hour documentary on sewage treatment. You know that you're bored if you start playing spoons or if you wonder if you're really bored. But on a more serious note, the American Heritage Dictionary defines boredom as a condition of mental weariness, listlessness, and discontent. But the most interesting statement is one that is given to us by a man by the name of Jean Edward Vaith, in which he says that the word did not even come into the English vocabulary until the Enlightenment of the 18th century, the beginning of what we call the modern era. That's about 250 years ago. Prior to that time, the word boredom was unheard of. And so it's something that's recent. What causes it, though? Boredom is often the result of too much wealth and too much time on our hands. It is an epidemic of children today. According to one source, it is the problem of television, videos, and computer games. And those activities, the source says, bombard our children with so much stimuli that it prevents them from being able, it doesn't give them a chance just to slow down and to reflect thoughtfully and to learn how to just process new information. They're so busy running in these games. Last night, one of our kids on the way to the youth rally that Kyle took several of our youth to had one of those. And it's a game that this little creature was running all over the screen. And as an adult, I'm watching this, I'm thinking, man, that's just too busy for me. I like to slow down and think about things a little more. But they were having so much fun with it. In 1997, there was an article that came out in the New York Times by a woman by the name of Alessandra Stanley. And you may remember with the fall of the Berlin Wall and with the Glasnost in Russia, there was a whole change in Russian, the way the Russian business world began to work and the way the economy functioned in Russia. And there were suddenly millionaires coming into Russia. They were making their wealth in the new Russia. And here's what this article said. It said that Russian women were finding that boredom and depression are side effects of wealth. And then Lewis Mumford said that by his very success in inventing labor-saving devices, modern man has manufactured an abyss of boredom that is only, or that only the privileged classes of earlier civilizations have ever fathomed. We can trace boredom back to a lack of faith in God. That's why it's something we need to discuss tonight. It has to do with a preoccupation with self and the neglect of what is around us. One man said that boredom is what happens when we lose contact with the universe. Another individual says when people are bored, it is primarily with their own selves. You see, boredom has been attributed to unchallenging jobs, unfulfilled expectations, lack of physical activity, and being too much of a spectator and too little of a participant in activities. What danger does it pose for us? Boredom has some dangers that it brings into our lives, folks. And when we find ourselves listless and discontent, we find ourselves susceptible to what promises excitement for us. Boredom has made more gamblers than greed, more drunkards than thirst, and perhaps, as one individual said, more suicides than despair. And another one said that boredom is often the motivation for adultery and divorce, abuse of alcohol and drugs, and even suicide. And finally, one individual says, boredom is a vital problem for the moralist, since at least half the sins of mankind are caused by the fear of it. But when a Christian is bored, when we become bored, we stop being useful to God, and we stop being active in our service to God because we're bored. And so that being said, if that is a problem, and if this is what causes it, what does our faith have to do with boredom? How does it give us a victory over something that can so take away our lives as to cause us to focus more upon ourselves and less upon God, to cause us to become less useful in God's service than we may have been in the past? And especially for our young people. Because if our young people are the ones for whom this is the greatest problem, those of us here tonight who are the adults in this body need to stop and think about what do we need to do for our young people to help them overcome this thing called boredom in their lives. Because it's not just going to automatically go away. It's been here for the last 250 years. How do we overcome it? Well, Jesus tells us. Because what Jesus calls upon us to do is to change the focus of our lives. You see, boredom is the result of an obsession with self and with our possessions. And we have become a society that, whether we want to acknowledge it or not, we're wealthy, folks. There was a time in this society that hasn't been that long ago that some of you can remember when you were fortunate if you owned one vehicle that was parked in the driveway. You were fortunate if you had the money to put gas in it. You were fortunate if every year you received a new pair of overalls. And some of you remember those days. You had one house, and that house may have had two bedrooms if you were fortunate. And it was small. And everything you made at your job was necessary just to put food on the table, clothes on your backs, and just to keep the bill collectors from knocking on your door. But today, we have two cars in the driveway. And we have more than what we need because we have a thing called discretionary income. That's money above and beyond what we need just to survive, that we can spend it on whatever we want. And some are fortunate enough not only to have their primary residence, but also to have a secondary residence somewhere, a place out by the lake that they go to on the weekends. You see, we are wealthy. And we want to make sure that our kids do well. I've heard parents of years ago, I want my children to have it better than I have it. And I'm not so sure that that's really good. Because in having it better than we had it, some of our children have not really learned to appreciate hard work, sacrifice, going without, saving, and putting back for a rainy day. That being said, Jesus challenges us to focus on different things. He challenges us, first of all, to deny ourselves. In Luke chapter 9, verse 23, this is the way Jesus said it. If anyone wishes to come after me, he must deny himself, take up his cross daily, and follow me. And then he added to that, for whoever wishes to save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake, the same shall save it. You see, people who are obsessed with self are never happy because it's always about me and what I'm going to get and what I have. And so people who lose themselves in service to God are people who are never bored because there's always something to be done. Yesterday I had the opportunity to talk with my mother, and she was telling me about one of the elders at Walnut Street who had a lawnmower turn over with him, and because of an injury he's gone to Texas to be with his daughter for a period of time while he's recuperating. And his wife had passed away a few years back, and she had asked him, she said, don't you get bored? And he said, no, I have too much I'm doing. And this is a man that's in his 80s now. He works at the park, Montgomery Bell, in the office. He does all kinds of things in the community with different groups and different people, as well as serving as an elder of the church. I don't have time to get bored. I'm too busy serving others. So you see, when we're busy serving God, there's no time for boredom. But Jesus not only challenges us to deny self, he challenges us to change the object of our affection. In Matthew chapter 6, there in verse 19, Jesus tells us not to store up for ourselves treasures here upon earth, where he says, moth and rust destroy and thieves break in and steal. But he says, lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroy and where thieves do not break in and steal. And then he makes this statement, for where your treasure is, there is your heart also. The pleasure of earthly things is fleeting. It doesn't last. It's temporary. And it's followed by inevitable letdowns. You put your hope in things that are here, eventually you're going to be let down by that. It doesn't last. It doesn't sustain. It is described when speaking of Moses leaving Egypt and going with his own people as the passing pleasures of sin, because that's exactly what it is. It passes away. It does not fulfill in the long term. The only permanent possession that any of us have is the one that is laid up in heaven for us. It is that one that Peter describes as being undefiled. It will not pass away. And our affections need to be placed upon that. Jesus' teachings were designed to give us joy. This is the way we find him putting it in John chapter 15, verse 11. He makes the statements to his disciples. He says, "These things I have spoken to you, that my joy may be in you and that your joy may be made full." Jesus wants us not to be bored, but if anything, he wants us to be a joyful people who are always busily engaged in doing God's work and serving him. And if we have enough faith in Jesus to follow his teachings, then we're going to find out that that attacks one of the main causes of our boredom, which is our preoccupation with ourselves. Because it's no longer about me, it's about the things of God. But Jesus enlists us also to be engaged in a type of service that truly does satisfy. People are bored because they know that their efforts mean very little. What is this going to do? What's this going to accomplish? I'm bored because this doesn't do anything. And yet what Jesus does is he enlists us to engage in service that has eternal consequences. What is that? It is the saving of souls. That has eternal consequences. Because one of these days, if you have been responsible for someone's salvation, you're going to get to enjoy being in heaven with that individual and rejoice because that individual obeyed the gospel, and you had a hand in it. Yes, Jesus said to his disciples, "Go into all the world and preach the gospel to all creation." But they were to pass on what they had been taught. They were to teach others how to do the same. And that's why by the time you come to Acts chapter 8 and the persecution that arose over the stoning of Stephen there in Jerusalem, that those that were scattered as a result of that persecution, Luke records, went everywhere preaching the word. And the word there for preach is not somebody standing in a pulpit. It is spreading good news, evangelism. And that's what they did. And in the proper perspective, our saving souls, our own soul and the souls of others, is more important than gaining the whole world. Because what will we give in exchange for our soul if we gain the whole world and yet lose the very soul that is eternal? Because the things in this world do not last and the body does not last, but this soul is going to live on. The apostles found great joy in their service to God. When John saw the fruits of his labors, he had to write that he had no greater joy. In 3 John verses 3 and 4, he says, "I was very glad when brethren came and testified to your truth." That is how you were walking in the truth. And then he said this. He says, "I have no greater joy than this, to hear of my children walking in the truth." Well, John was responsible for that. They're walking in the truth. The prospects of seeing his converts in the presence of the Lord gave Paul great hope and joy for the future, because in 1 Thessalonians chapter 2, there in verse 19, Paul would say this. He said, "For who is our hope or joy or crown of exaltation?" And then he answers his own question. He says, "Is it not even you in the presence of our Lord Jesus that is coming?" And then he affirms it. "For you are our glory and our joy." To see someone that has obeyed the gospel because of your efforts, to see the church of our Lord grow because you are doing something to bring that about, takes away any boredom that any of us might think we struggle with. because we're too busily engaged in doing good things. And when a person is engaged in the work of Jesus, one of the things that we know is that our labor is not in vain in the Lord. That's what Paul said. And so we're to be steadfast, immovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord. How can you possibly be bored with that? Especially when we understand that the work we're doing here have cosmic consequences. Paul, in writing to the church at Ephesus there in chapter 6, said that we wrestle not with flesh and blood, but against principalities and powers and rulers of this dark world. You see, that's where our real work is going on. And so when we understand that we're doing things that have eternal consequences, when we understand that the work we're engaged in is far greater than anything else that we might do here upon this earth, what a difference it makes in what our life is really all about. Sometime when you have time, if you're bored, sit down and read the book of Ecclesiastes. And one of the things that you're going to find is that here's a man who has everything that anybody could ever have. He was the Bill Gates or the Donald Trump of his day, but more than that, he was the king of Israel. He had more money than anybody could ever imagine. And he experimented trying to find out what brought joy and happiness and contentment to life. And yet what we find is that in all of his experimentation, all of these different things he tried, money, wealth, building projects, you name it, he tried. Wine, he said it was all vanity and striving after the wind. And when he finally finished his experiment, he comes to the conclusion of his writing and he says, The conclusion of the matter is this: fear God, keep His commandments, for that's the whole duty of man. That's what brings satisfaction. That's what brings fulfillment to life, is to fear God and to keep His commandments. Wouldn't it be good if he'd listened to his father David and had considered the great reward in keeping God's commandments? Then Solomon might not have experienced so much vanity in his own life. But boredom is a result of preoccupation with vanity in life. Jesus came to deliver us from the listlessness and the discontent that we have in life. And He does that by giving us purpose and direction. He wants us to find great joy in serving God and being His children. So I ask you tonight, how about it? Do you have that joy? Are you bored? Are you serving God? Are you sitting around thinking about, I'm bored? Because I'm going to tell you what my dad told me years ago. If you're bored, come with me. I've got something for you to do. And what I've got for you to do is to get on board serving God, doing His will. Begin using your talents and your abilities and the strength that God provides you to honor Him every single day of your life. Start sharing the good news with people. Start taking it out of this building and getting it out into this community. Start letting people know that there's something far better than anything this world has to offer. But maybe you haven't done that yourself yet. Maybe you're a person who has not yet put Christ on. You have not yet confessed the name of Christ before this body of Christians or any other place for that matter. And you've not yet turned from sin and been buried with Him in baptism. If that's the case, then His invitation is for you tonight. If you want to escape your boredom, if you want to accomplish your victory through your faith, that's where we start. If you need to respond, won't you come as together we stand and sing.